Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days. Jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine. Whatever it is, whenever it is in your day that you're listening to us, we want to thank you for doing so. Today, we're coming to you after a huge win for the Boston Celtics over the Washington Wizards, 110-102 in a game that really the Celtics had complete control for basically 70% of it. And the beginning was a little crazy. The third quarter was a mess. The second half was a mess. And the Wizards had a huge comeback. But the Celtics held on. They are now basically, not really, but basically locked in to the two seed with now a 2.5 game lead over the Wizards with, what is it now, they've played 71 games, so 11 games left in the season. Tough to make up that stretch for the Wizards. I'm John Corrales, joined today by Sam Jam Packard. We are known as the Rain and Jays. Sam, we're just talking about it. That second half, you're saying, is just ridiculously weird. I don't know. That third quarter lasted for an hour.
The third quarter lasted for an hour. It felt like the refs completely lost control of the game. And then for the Celtics to only score 18 points in the fourth quarter and still win by 8 was a little bit weird. It's not kind of how you'd want to finish games. But those two things, just the second half being really weird, kind of clouds the dominance that was the Celtics in the second quarter, limiting the Wizards to only 19 shots. And it was just like – it felt like Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, Marcus Smart, but especially Bradley, were just all over Bradley Beal for the entire night. And that's going to be confusing because they're both named Bradley. So I guess we'll go with last names. But Bradley Beal, I feel like, must be exhausted right now. He only scored 19 points on 6-15 shooting. I think he only scored 2 points in the second half, but he just couldn't do anything. And every single time they tried to run him off some interior picks, the Celtics were doing a great job of switching those on the interior, whether it was Jay Crowder or Jaylen Brown or Marcus Smart with Avery Bradley. And so Beal never caught the ball in any space, and it felt like he was just swarmed. And I don't know if John Wall is hurt. We know he had that little dust up in the Mavericks game. He kind of rolled his ankle tonight, but he just really wasn't doing much for most of the game. At halftime, he only had 6 shots, and it feels like John Wall should be able to get a mid-range jumper over Isaiah Thomas anytime he wants, but tonight he just wasn't as aggressive. So I think the Celtics were playing phenomenal defense, but it was kind of weird to see the Wizards play this poorly, because there was the graphic on the screen after they started 2-8. They're like, what, 40 and 20 since then. It's just they've been playing unbelievable basketball, but tonight just didn't seem like they really cared that much, and the Celtics were dominant really on both ends of the floor.
Well, I think the Celtics defense made them not care much. And that's when you boil it down, the Celtics played phenomenal defense for most of this game. First quarter, not so much. And when you look at Bradley Beal's numbers, in the first quarter, he had 12 points on 4 of 6 shooting. So for him to finish with, what would he finish with? 19 points on 6 of 15 shooting. So they really limited him the rest of the way. The second half numbers, let me pull up the second half statistics for him. 4 points on 1 of 5 shooting, and that one shot came in the fourth quarter, late in the fourth quarter. Now, it came in the middle of a run where the Wizards cut a big lead down to, I believe,
6.
3. What is it, 6? So they made a run, but the Celtics, for the most part, except for that tail end there where they made a run, and it almost looked like in that run, they get a little bit lazy. I've never seen Isaiah Thomas picked clean twice like he was. That they had that weird sequence. He got picked, and then he came back to get the ball. That was that, you know, Keystone Cops, you know, Benny Hill music type of scenario where the ball was getting thrown all over the floor. And then the next time down, Oubre just picked him clean again, went in for the dunk. So it looked like the Celtics got a little bit lazy, and they were just trying to run out the clock at that point rather than run an offense. But beyond that, they played amazing defense. Bradley Beal was hounded all night. Like you said, I think the Celtics went out and really did a great job boxing out. They out-rebounded the Wizards 54-39. The Celtics had 20 offensive rebounds. 20 offensive rebounds. That's insane. That is an insane number for the Boston Celtics. So they worked hard, and you contrast that to the Philly game where they just shit themselves at the end and really didn't try hard at all. They went out tonight and worked their asses off. They got their hands on a lot of shots, even though it looks like they had 6 block shots, but I swear they bothered a ton more. They did a great job on the boards. They limited the Wizards to not many. They had 16 second chance points, so the Celtics won that battle. They really did just a great job of working hard, working together. And this is, I guess, proof of my point overall with the Celtics this season. When they're fully healthy and fully engaged, they are a damn good team. But only when they are fully healthy and only when they are fully engaged are they that good. They cannot lapse. They cannot take a night off because they will get crushed by whomever they're playing. Denver, Phoenix, Sacramento, they will get crushed. If they don't have a full complement of players, if they're missing one guy, a key guy, like one of their starters, then they have the potential to not be very good. So this team, this Celtics squad that we saw tonight, fully healthy, fully engaged, that's a dangerous team. And they sent a message after that first quarter. They went out and they sent a message. They locked Washington down.
Yeah, I agree. Their margin for error is incredibly small, which is, it's kind of crazy how well they played when Avery Bradley missed all those games with injury, because he really kept the Celtics in the game in that first quarter. He played all 12 minutes, scored 11 points, had 4 boards, 3 assists, and was all over Beal the entire time. And it's just, it's wild to think that they missed such an extended period of time and kind of not only stayed above water, but played pretty damn good basketball with him on the bench. He was amazing and really carried them in the first quarter. I thought they just did a good job of just kind of turning the game into a bruising physical matchup, just forcing the ball inside or forcing the Wizards to force the ball inside. It felt like early on they had a lot of Gortat post-ups and then some Morris post-ups. Gortat got in some foul trouble early, which I think the Celtics did a really good job of taking advantage of. But you were talking about this with Jay on yesterday's podcast, just about how much their depth is that much better when they have their full complement of players. Like tonight, Terry Rozier only played 6 minutes. Like you don't, I mean, 12 minutes. Like you don't, they just had so much less time of bad players on the court. There was basically Horford, Isaiah were out there for the majority of the game, and it's just you feel so much more secure as a fan that like they're not going to completely fuck it up. I mean, there's still a 2016-2017 Celtics fan, so you still have it in the back of your brain that they're probably going to blow the lead. But you're a little bit more secure when you know that they're like the starters can come back in and kind of stop any run that's really happening.
Yeah. You saw some of those stretches where Terry Rozier, who just made some bad plays. But yeah, the calming effect of having Isaiah and Avery, or Avery and Marcus Smart together, if you want to have that defensive presence. They did a good job tonight of scoring when Isaiah wasn't playing. And at least in the second half, they were able to kind of weather the storm in the third quarter. As crazy as that third quarter was, they still managed to get points when Isaiah Thomas sat, and that allowed them to sit Isaiah for a little bit longer. He played 34 minutes in this game, which that's pretty damn good. You would expect at least 4 or 5 more minutes in a game of this magnitude, but they did a good job. Different guys stepped up, and like Marcus Smart did not have the best game of his career. He made some poor choices offensively, but he's a guy that, you know, in a clutch situation, he saved the team tonight. He saved the team when everything was starting to fall apart there in the fourth quarter. He gets his ass into the post and bullies his way. I forget who was guarding him. Was it Jason Smith or I don't know who was guarding him. But bullies his way to the rim, gets a layup off a post up, then comes down, rips the ball out of, I think it was Smith's hands, and then comes down and hits 2 free throws. So this team, when it's all going right, you have guys playing in these situations that Marcus Smart can be in a situation where he can kind of bail you out, save you like he has in the past with that kind of like bully ball style of play. But that was possible because Wall and Oubre were trying to take Isaiah out of the play. And I was sitting there screaming at the TV saying, go ahead, they want to play 4-on-4, play 4-on-4. There's a lot more space to go play 4-on-4. And that's what they did. Do you want to take Isaiah out of it completely? Fine. Then now you have one less person to clog the lane, one less person to dig down and try to rip the ball out of his hands or force him to make a pass. If you don't have Isaiah on the floor, the team is completely defended differently. That's the whole thing that I'm getting at. The Celtics, with everybody out there, it just changes the entire dynamic. Fine. Do you want to play 4-on-4? You got a situation where you got Marcus Smart in the post, spread him out, let him do work because he's the strongest guy out there, and it paid off. So, I just like where this team is with everybody in their place, and if they're willing to take advantage of that situation, which in that case they were, and not just sit back and watch Isaiah try to do everything.
The thing that's great about the kind of the full roster Celtics, and I was just thinking about this tonight, is that they have their, I guess what we'll call their core four with Isaiah, Bradley, Crowder, and Horford. But then really, depending on the matchup, they have so much versatility in what they can do. Do you want to kind of put Kelly Olynyk on the floor and add shooting? Do you want Marcus Smart because you need more perimeter defense? Or is Jaylen Brown going to be that fifth guy if you want more kind of defensive versatility on the perimeter? Also throw in the big dog who missed a couple bunnies tonight, but he's always in his, he never plays over 20 minutes a game, but he always gives you some kind of nice defensive intensity and is always kind of in the mix. I just really like that they're able to kind of, they have those four guys who do a lot of great things and then are able to kind of mix and match depending on the matchup. So we saw moments tonight where the Wizards had no answer for Kelly Olynyk, so they kept on feeding Olynyk in the post. We saw some Jaylen Brown with that lineup down the stretch. We saw, and then we saw Marcus come in the game and make that huge FU steal and be in the post. they just can do so much more when they have that core four and then just add on that kind of extra piece that I think it just – it makes them dangerous moving forward. And I just want to take a moment to shout out Marcus Smart in the post because he is a bully down there. And in the first half, he absolutely murdered Brandon Jennings, who's a small, small man. But it's just always fun to see guard-on-guard action in the post. And Marcus Smart's going to win the majority of the time. And it's just another random attribute that you can throw out there. So if you have a team playing three guards and you know you can get that matchup in the post with Smart, it's just another way to attack. So I really like just the versatility of the different things Brad Stevens can throw out there with that core four plus one.
Yeah, Marcus Smart in the post has been a nice little revelation. They've really started to go to it a lot. And he does really, really well with it. He'll back down bigger guys. He's not afraid of it. He's not afraid of the contact. He's a tremendous passer out of the post. He's a tremendous passer. I think very highly, obviously, of Marcus Smart's passing. But he sees the floor really well. And you put him in that post, you force teams to react. This is the amazing thing. Now, you almost have to double him in the post now. Opposing teams, you sit there, you see Marcus Smart with a matchup like against the Jennings. You have to come up with something else because you can't just let him back a guy down because he can back Jennings down. He can do that. So once you force a double team on a non-Isaiah guy on the Celtics, you're screwed. Offensively, you're screwed. So that's a great place to initiate some offense on a situation that I think has largely increasingly been minimized in the NBA. People, post-ups have been considered just poor offense, and more people they're just kind of getting away from that stuff. But with Marcus, it can be so good in certain situations because what it forces the rest of the defense to do. So that was great, and he came through in a big situation there. Kelly Olynyk, I almost want Kelly Olynyk to start games with five fouls now because as soon as he got those, he got three fouls in 10 seconds.
And he got angry.
He got pissed. I've never seen Kelly Olynyk pissed off. And all of a sudden, Kelly Olynyk pissed off is a pretty damn good player. Well, I feel like I just want to do something. I don't know. You got to play like mind games with the guy. What do you insult his parents? Smack him across the face?
Yeah, you gotta have like Jay Crowder just slap him in the face and challenge his manhood.
Yeah, it's something to piss him off because as soon as he got pissed off, holy shit, he started backing guys down on the post. No fear. He was rebound. Like, my God, he turned into a different guy. It was awesome.
Yeah, no, it was downright a different person, and it was amazing. He didn't even finish with that like. Great of a line, only 9 points, but he did have 11 rebounds and four offensive rebounds, but most of those didn't even come in that angry stretch. But it was great to see aggressive Kelly Olynyk. I don't know what the solution is. Do you have him run out and just like hard foul the other team's star just to start every single one of his shifts? Like, I don't know how we can get aggressive Kelly to every single night, but you're right, five foul Kelly, that's some entertaining stuff.
That guy,
I really like that Brad stayed with him because Brad could sense that he had a little bit of aggression with him.
Yeah, seriously, that was fantastic. Who else? I mean, so many different guys that you need to shout out. Like Jay Crowder had, you know, a typical game. And he was a team high plus 15, and you know, 16 points, 9 rebounds, 3 steals. He had a great, I think, he had a key play against Bradley Beal when Washington was making their first run and they had cut the big lead down to like 10. And Beal had the ball on the right wing, one-on-one with Crowder, and he almost started to turn the corner. He couldn't quite do it. And as he was starting to gather to go for the layup, Crowder stripped him, the ball went off of Beal's leg, and Celtics ball, and then they rebuilt that lead back up. That is a clutch play. That is a huge play in that situation because the game changes dramatically if Washington cuts that lead down to single digits. So I just want to say that even though Crowder didn't shoot the ball particularly well tonight, He's part of that defensive, that menacing defensive front that when it comes down to the playoffs and Beal and Wall have to go up there against Smart and Bradley and Crowder, that's just amazing. And to have Crowder switch out onto Beal and be able to make that kind of defensive play, that's just huge. It's huge.
He had a couple great plays against Beal. He forced another steal, I think, later in the game. He made a hustle play on one of the crazy, weird kind of pinball third quarter events. But he was responsible for getting a loose ball, getting it to Horford. There was a missed shot. He got the rebound again. He's just kind of the hustle player. I don't know if he gets enough credit as he deserves on the Celtics team, because there is there is Isaiah Thomas, and Marcus Smart gets kind of the repertoire for making the small plays. But I think Crowder just really is one of the most solid players on the Celtics, and he is the most consistent in his effort every night. And be one of the reasons that their defense has been so good since the All-Star break is he has finally kind of been as explosive and has been able to fly around on the defensive end. And he's just playing really great basketball right now. He's not hitting as many threes as he was earlier in the season, but I don't even think it matters at this point. I think his contributions on the defensive end are enough, and he's going to make the big play when he needs to. And we saw him tonight. He hit a couple big threes, 3 of 8 from the three-point line. He's just been a very solid player, especially since the All-Star break. And it may not show up in the scoreboard or the box score, but I just think he's doing a great job. But the other guy I wanted to highlight was Al Horford being aggressive in the post.
He
really was looking to get contact and go up and get buckets, and it worked on multiple occasions tonight. And you were talking earlier just about the kind of how it's a different look to kind of create offense in the post. I noticed he was able to, once he kind of showed that look of pivoting and going up with the ball in the middle of the lane, he was able to kind of hesitate in the post more and just wait for passers. And that's when he feels like he's at his strongest. So I'm all for more aggressive Al Horford. He scored 16 points tonight, 6 from 11. I would have liked him to still take some more threes. I thought he had some open chances. It was only, he was 0 for 1, but it's just also good to see him from that, just being able to be kind of that bigger body in the post and getting contact and finishing through contact, which is just an amazing skill to have, and it's really advantageous for the Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, Al Horford in the post is always looking to pass, but when he can be aggressive initially and score a few times and force the defense to react to him, that's what it's all about. You're forcing the defense to react, but whenever he has that ball in the post, I keep screaming for cutters. Marcus Smart did it once and drew a foul. He's always looking to pass in those situations. But when he did, you're right, he had a couple of plays where just bullying his way down and just, I call it a moose fight. If you've ever seen two moose fight, just banging antlers and just trying to move each other, that's what banging their way down in the post is to me. It's just two guys, you just go at it and go at it, and somebody's going to give ground, and the person who gives up the most ground is going to lose that battle. And Al Horford's not banging down, backing down too many people, but every so often he does it, and it's really nice to see. So the Celtics now have a 2.5 game lead. Over the Wizards and 3.5 game lead over Toronto. You feel comfortable now with 11 games to play? The Celtics are the 2 seed. Can we feel better about this now, assuming that no one gets hurt or no nothing out of the ordinary happens?
I would say so. I think this evens up the head-to-head matchup against the Wizards. There's 2.5 games, and the Celtics, Jay King, the other Jay, just tweeted this out. They're now 11-1 in their last 12 home games, and they have 4 more home games on this stretch. They only have 3 more road games left in the season, so I think that's 8 home games total, 3 road games. They're playing really well at home right now. It's already been well documented that they have the easiest schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Celtics could even be looking to find some times to rest some players moving forward. I know that's – we just talked about how much more dangerous they are when they have their full complement of players, and it's not like the Celtics to be resting people. But it feels like it's something that you might want to consider moving forward, and we've had this kind of debate about rest going on for the past week. As we saw, Adam Silver was upset or sent a memo to the owners tonight talking about how, trying to be more impactful in the decisions to rest players. But I just think it would make more sense for the Celtics to kind of look for opportunities to maybe get Jay Crowder a night because of his explosiveness is so necessary. Maybe get Al Horford a night. Who knows? Maybe even get Isaiah Thomas another night just because it feels like the two seed is wrapped up. And I'm saying this and I'm hesitant to take games for granted because I just sat through that terrible game in Philadelphia, but it feels like it's something the Celtics should at least consider as they close down the season, especially having so many games at home.
Yeah, you know, they could certainly, I mean, if you look at the schedule that's coming up, the Celtics schedule, they play Wednesday. The thing is here, they play Wednesday, they play Friday, Sunday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Wednesday, Thursday, so they got one more back-to-back, then a Saturday, a Monday, and a Wednesday. So they've got days off in between. So if you look for opportunities to rest guys, maybe you kind of do a little scoreboard watching. You play the guys Wednesday night, and then you might look at Friday. The Wizards on Wednesday night play Atlanta. If they lose to Atlanta, now Atlanta's been struggling. They haven't had Paul Millsap. But if Washington loses to Atlanta and the Celtics win and they go up 3.5 games with 10 games left, then you really start looking at the rest days and you say, okay, you give guys Thursday, Friday, Saturday off. You get 2 days off plus a practice, and you go into that Sunday game against Miami. Then you still got Monday, Tuesday off. You get 2 days off before you play Milwaukee. It's a good stretch of rest right there. So that Phoenix game could be a game to target for a potential rest game. One of those back-to-backs, maybe somebody doesn't travel to Atlanta potentially. And so there's something to be said there, especially when you look at the Washington schedule, which we've done, but they have Atlanta and Brooklyn, but then they have a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 game road trip that includes Cleveland, the Clippers, Utah, Golden State, bunch of tough, tough games in there. And then I'm looking at the Cleveland schedule.
They have something like 4 back-to-backs already, like to left to go in the season, which is kind of a crazy stat. So you would expect them to maybe be resting people. I don't know. At this point, are you gung-ho for the one seed, or are you just trying to get into the playoffs, playing good basketball, and being healthy?
I at this point, I don't care about the one or the two seed. It'd be nice. The one seed is just nice. To say that you've become the top seed in the East. I mean, but I understand that it'd be a product of the Cavs resting. So whatever, however it works out. What I'm mainly looking at the Cavs schedule for is the Cavs play Washington and Boston once more. What are we getting? The Cavs face Washington on the second night of a back-to-back. So they have Denver next Wednesday on the road, Charlotte on that Friday on the road. I'm thinking if we're looking at potential rest, I'm thinking that they might send guys home after that Denver game, rest against Charlotte, and be at full strength at home against Washington. So that could be a situation where Washington faces a full strength Cavs team, obviously a much higher possibility of losing that game. Fast forward to the Celtics game on April 5th. The Cavs are coming off. They'll have a Sunday game at home against Indiana, a Tuesday game at home against Orlando, and a Friday game at home against Atlanta. In the middle of that is that Wednesday, April 5th, second night of a back-to-back that is on the road. That is a clear game right there where they could rest guys. Don't don't travel. That makes much more sense. You give them Wednesday and Thursday off, a couple of days off before playing Friday night at home. I think the Celtics might get at home a resting Cavaliers team, which would be obviously a huge advantage. So that could be a game the Celtics win. Now all of a sudden that top seed is, if they win that game, they pick up a full game on the Cavs. Who knows what happens between now and then? I said after the Sixers lost that forget about the top seed, but I might have spoken too soon. So that little bit of schedule analysis basically tells me the Celtics have still a shot at beating the Cavaliers and moving up to the top seed. The Wizards have a shot at facing a full-strength Cavaliers team, which could drop them even further. And they've got a bunch of road games against some tough competition. I like the way the schedule's playing out. I think tonight's win just basically solidified the second seed, barring any sort of ridiculous happenstance that costs the Celtics a player or something.
Yeah, they're definitely in good shape moving forward. A question I want to ask you about resting is, do you think the resting is purely just in name only for rest, or is it something like we're going to see these guys later, so we're not going to show them anything? And I'm thinking particularly about when the Warriors rested their four main guys against the Spurs, I think it was a weekend ago, or it's just like, do you think there's any kind of gamesmanship there, just saying like, we're not going to let you get any sort of read on us at the final game of the season just because we know we might see you later and we don't want to give you any sort of advantage?
Maybe, but I don't think there's much of that going on. I think it's just truly a rest situation, because what's one game out of 82 and however many times they've played each other if it's Spurs against the Warriors, each team's going to know everything the other team does. You know, go ahead.
I was just saying, like, in that Warriors situation, they didn't play on the second night of a back-to-back, but they could have easily skipped the game before the night of the back-to-back. Maybe it's just something to, like, spite the Spurs, because the Spurs are the always one resting stars and then ruining games, like, that way. I don't know. I just felt like it was a...
No.
It was more of a strategic thing. And then when you mentioned that the Cavs may rest players against the Celtics, the idea crept back up in my head. It was just kind of not letting them see your latest. But you're right. I think once it actually comes down to the playoffs, you got to trust your players and your scheme. I don't think anyone's going to steal an entire playoff series just based on scheme tricks alone.
It's not like the NFL where if Bill Belichick has the play, that one play that he doesn't want to show anybody, you whip off a play like that and you shock somebody, that touchdown could be the difference between winning or losing and advancing. If the Celtics rested against a potential opponent and they came up with some shocking thing that maybe won them a game or won them a quarter or something, it's a series. It's a seven-game series, and the video guys will have broken down all of that thing. If they whipped off a play in the fourth quarter that won them a game, that play will be broken down and practiced against, and it may help. Maybe that one game does swing a series, but it's much less likely in a seven-game situation than it is in a scenario like a March Madness or the NFL where it's one and done. What I think is happening with the rest, two things. One, they're resting guys. They really are resting guys. And I've talked about it and written about it a lot. I do believe in getting that rest. I think that that's a legitimate thing. As much as Karl Malone wants to say what he says, I hate what Karl Malone said, by the way. I wrote that on Red's Army. I don't have to rehash it here. I just hate pulling in the proverbial human shields and invoking first responders in the thing that doesn't involve them. But anyway,
I've always hated Karl Malone. So there you go.
If you guys want to read it, it's on Red's Army. I wrote it on Sunday. The rest thing I think is legitimate, because the season is long And what we don't realize is this is game 71. If a team is really going to make a big run to the finals, it's 100 games. So there's still, for a team like the Cavaliers or the Spurs or the Warriors, still potentially 30 games left to go. That's almost half of the season, half of a regular season. So this is, it's almost like they're playing in trimesters and the rest of the league's playing in semesters. They have a different schedule. They have different breaks that they have to consider. So it's just different for those teams. And resting those guys at this point of the season, it's almost like a second all-star break. So I'm okay with the concept. The execution, I don't think, is any accident. Two straight Saturday night ABC primetime games, heavily promoted and completely starless. That, to me, is a message. I think it's calculated. I think those teams are sending messages, public messages, to the NBA saying, we're not going to deal with all of these back-to-backs. With, you said it before, the Cavaliers still have four back-to-backs left in this regular season. That's, I don't care about the Cavs, but just look at it from, if this was the Celtics, it's bullshit. To have four more back-to-backs left with 11 games to play, that's insanity. So I think that there was definitely a message being sent in both of those games. And I know Cleveland was saying, Love is rehabbing his knee. That's fine. Kyrie was actually hurt. That's fine. LeBron was the only guy who was resting. But they could have rested against the Lakers. So I think that
it's more of an FU to the league powers than the other teams in the league.
I think so. I think that that's a message to the NBA to say, we need to figure this out now. This is our time to figure this out, because we can't, whenever you put out next season's schedule, we can't be having this situation anymore. So I think there's a couple of high-profile middle fingers, personally, that's my guess, a couple of high-profile middle fingers that tell the league we got to change the scheduling situation. So that's my take on it. Okay.
All right, before we wrap up, can I just say some dumb things I noticed in my notes?
Yeah.
Oh, we got 6 minutes of Tyler Zeller tonight, and immediately I went to type in the notes, oh, God, why is Tyler Zeller in? And then he had some nice moments. And we, anytime Tyler Zeller makes a layup, Tommy immediately goes on a rant about how soft Zeller's hands are and how he's got the nicest hands in the league. And it's one of my favorite tropes. And anytime I hear it, I want to take a drink. It's just one of the great Celtics drinking game things there are.
It's fantastic. Okay, next. This is almost like the Jam-Packard brain dump.
The Jam-Packard brain dump, yeah. More Tommy stuff. When he starts talking about the little guy.
Weird voice of his.
It's really creepy. And like, tonight, whoa. In the fourth quarter, he was started saying, I want the little guy to put the ice in on the cake. And I just was not comfortable with his tone or tenor, and I don't really enjoy it.
Keep going. Rapid fire. No, I'm not. I'm letting you go.
Did Otto Porter really play a basketball game tonight? I did not. He had one nice play, and other than that, I did not hear from him. Another thing, in honor of the game tonight, of the funeral part two, I wore a Coogee sweater, which is the most colorful piece of clothing I own. And the Celtics won. Coincidence? I think not. Everyone needs to tweet at Chris Forsberg and get him to add that to his official spreadsheet of odd Celtics stats.
Yes.
And the jam bag is out. That's all I got.
That's it? You're out? Okay. That's good stuff, though. I agree on all points. Let's talk about this now, because I don't want the expiration date to run out on this story. That's the end of the game discussion. The other thing that came out today that we have to discuss is the 08 Celtics team holding their reunion a year early, and I guess, on the anniversary of the construction of the championship team, but not inviting Ray Allen. Your take on, is this petty, or is this, are you happy about this? Do you give a shit? What's your take on this?
It's extremely petty, but I don't, and I'm kind of fine with that, because, like, have you met Kevin Garnett? Have you met Rajon Rondo? Also, if you're going to have a party, like, I'm sure that's a real awkward relationship. And if just for the sake of all party guests in attendance, I mean, I guess it's the polite thing to do to invite Ray Allen, but that's just not, if he does show up, that's just weird for everyone involved. So it's incredibly petty. I don't really care either way, but I also want to point out that SI just reported that Scott Pollard was also not invited to the 08 reunion party, and he had to find out about it on Twitter. So Ray Allen's not the only past lover who's scorned by Rajon Rondo and his party committee.
Now, why would he not be invited? What did he do?
He was the lesser of two white guys. You can only have one white guy at a reunion party.
I guess. I don't know. I think it's hilarious. I don't hold that level of animosity against Ray Allen.
Not at all. He was a very instrumental part in them winning a title.
And I know maybe this is the unpopular take. I guess I'm on a little bit of a roll of giving unpopular Boston sports takes, but he was a free agent and he made a decision and he took less money. He went somewhere else. That's how it goes. And I know that it was the rival, but here's a guy that was essentially traded by Danny Ainge. He was told he was traded and then it fell through. So if the Celtics can go ahead and trade the guy up until like that last minute, and have him be constantly mentioned in those rumors, then he was well within his rights to become a free agent, which he did, and go wherever he wanted to go. I almost always side with players in those situations. If the guys, however, want to be petty, and I hear them all talking, I see the reactions. If they don't want him there, then it's their party. I guess I say they should hold the thing in Boston, invite Ray Allen, and then change it to Miami at the last minute and not tell him. So then when he shows up and they could all text him from Miami and say, like, see, doesn't this feel like shit? Like that's how I would
new level pettiness.
Yeah.
The other thing about Ray Allen, it's not like he jumped ship early. Like, he was still with the Celtics through that 2011-2012 season. It's like, does anyone really think that, like, getting the band back together for 2012-2013 with, like, kind of with Ray playing reduced minutes because he was so old? Like, I just don't – he ended up making the right business decision for himself in terms of winning more titles, and then he single-handedly – basically delivered a title to the Heat with one of the most clutch basketball shots of all time. So I hold no hard feelings toward Ray Allen. I feel like he, like you said, he was going to be traded. He didn't owe any loyalty to the team like that. And it like, why stick around just with the old guys when you have another chance to win a title? And that should be the ultimate goal.
Yeah. All right. So I guess we both kind of on the same page there. So, all right. Since that's the case, let's wrap it up. Celtics win 110-102 over the Washington Wizards. Now hold a 2.5 game lead over those Wizards for the second seed with 11 games left and a really nice schedule coming up and a really bad schedule coming up for the Washington Wizards. I feel good. You feel good. We all feel good about where the Celtics are going to be. And if the Celtics match up against these guys in the second round, it'll be fun. It'll be definitely testy, and the Celtics will have home court advantage, and they do very well against the Wizards at home. So that bodes very well for a potential second round matchup. That's fun, and we hope that continues, and we may have a trip to the conference finals. That's a long way away. We got to get through the rest of the season first and get through the first round first. But I am excited about the win, so I am talking out of my ass. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for subscribing. If you haven't done so, search for Locked On Celtics on your favorite podcasting app or whatever thing it is that you use to listen to us. Or go to our Audioboom page, grab our RSS feed, plug it into whatever you use, and we'll be there. If you have not rated us 5 stars, please do that. We appreciate that very much. Leave us comments. Leave us tweet us like our boy Rifesy, who does this all the time, who said of Marcus Smart's night, that's so Marcus, terrible night, then saves the win. He uses the hashtag Rain and Jays. Do that throughout the game. We'll get to your tweets when we can on the show. We'll occasionally ask you for the mailbag, so do that, and we'll get those questions in for the show. Again, Celtics beat the Wizards. We're all very happy. Thanks for listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, J. King and Doc.